Morning, everyone. Hey, we'll start with a little verse that most of us know. And I'll read it up again at the end. But I've been really challenged, and Roger's right. That's been a long time coming. When he approached me a long time, it's like, man, he told me in 2 weeks later I'd be fine. But you know, with all this time, you've got this anxiety to build up. It's like, oh come on. So yeah, I'm glad I'm started, and I'll do a bit of a testimony, a bit about my nerves and my fears, which come towards public speaking. My goal also today is it's at the end of this. It's one of those things. I'm going to apologise. I'm going to race for a few things as well, because today I want it to be more of a practical thing. I want to give you kind of like visions of what's going on inside our bodies. And I mean, I don't know what God wants really, but I perceive it not at the end to be this emotional thing with tears, but more so like practical things that we can see and do afterwards. So I've been motivated. I said Nathan, I was going to say a little bit about him. I remember him, it was just after Christmas, and he put up this thing about the gladiator. And it was like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. And it said something like this: what we do in life echoes in eternity, and that we're influenced. And a wise man sets his inheritance for his children's children. I'm like, oh man, that's pretty deep, eh? It's pretty heavy. And along like that, you know, promising a future, not only for us, but our kids' kids. It's pretty freaky. It's pretty, ooh. And then old Ed, sorry, taking this a bit out of context a little bit, but one thing that stuck to my mind he spoke about was, you know, one thing that he kept on saying over and over is how can we be so stupid when we do those things? Sorry, Ed. No. But like, you know, put in a lame sort of typical thing. I don't kick my toe very often, but you know, I'll split the end of my toe like once every 2 years, and the very next day you go kick it again, eh? You're like, what? What's going on here? And the same thing in the spiritual realm. Sometimes we just do the most stupid things. And then Mike shared what he's gone through with his cancer, and Roger spoke after that, and knowing what Pastor's gone through, and just talking about refining and how through that Mike was refined as well. And then Brendan, last week I wasn't here, but saw online, it was pretty cool, about Daniel and the Lions. And just the opener for me, a reminder again, it wasn't a young man. You kind of get this vision of a young man jumping in the den and, yeah, I'm pretty cool. And, you know, he could have been 80 plus and he kind of got in there. And I kind of think, whoa, you know, getting near the end of my life, what sort of bravery am I going to be able to do? How am I going to, I don't know, just be godly in times of trouble and need? And I kind of put myself in there, and you know, the king comes along afterwards, I'd be like, I don't know if I'd be yelling abuse or something, but I wouldn't be so like nice and godly of what old that man Daniel was. And I think of also, you know, Jesus, how on earth could that guy, I know there's God in him, at the end kind of be so victorious? I wouldn't say happy, but just have the grit, determination. But I also have flaws with that a bit, and I've struggled with that, because I kind of think with awesome communion, and I think of the Anzacs, and put a picture on it. I've been watching quite a few documentaries of them, and some people lied about their age, because they weren't promised, but to their understanding, some of the Anzacs got on a ship thinking they'd go to England, and their parents, so their grandparents, were still there, and a lot of their parents were born in England, so they actually thought they're going to go to England, hang out, train a bit, and hang out with their family, meet some of their family. And yet, they didn't even get there. It's pretty crazy to kind of think, you know, how can God say that we've got a hope in a future when you're just like this? And I think it's pretty neat, though, and I agree with Roger, and I just said to him before, but for years we've been acknowledging the death and the people that have fallen, but we haven't been, it's only just recently we've been acknowledging what those people came back with that survived, and the shadows and things that they bring with them, and the consequences. And not to say they didn't sin there, but you can't understand that a lot of things happen to people. It's not actually their doing. So it's a bit of a revelation today, and for me, and looking a bit on my own life, that not only should we be dealing with our sin, but sometimes life's just unfair. Good things happen to bad people, and we have shadows and consequences and things that, yeah, just like how the Anzacs returned. and how can they push on and be all that God wants them to be when they've got those things and burdens on their shoulders? And a lot of them had no one to talk to. It's pretty neat, actually. I don't know if you've seen this university. I don't know if it's Otago or not, but what they're doing is asking people to video their stories. You know, 86, 90-year-old people telling their stories about what's going on. And every single one of them, you could write a book on what's going on. It's amazing. But for years, they haven't said anything. It's crazy what they've had to deal with. Okay, so what I'm talking on today, a long introduction, I'm going to speed up, here we go, is to live a happy, victorious life. And like I said, with practical things in there, and like, how do we refine our minds? How do we work in our hearts? How do we renew our hearts when we've got that sort of stuff going on? And like I said, I'll share a few testimonies myself. So here we go. I'll just quickly read from Romans 12 too. Don't need to put it up because I'll read fast. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service and worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that is good and acceptable and perfect. And I go, whoa, that's a challenge to an Anzac Day. Present your body and then be, you know, basically out there advertising God when you've got baggage. It's pretty crazy. So moving quickly, discernment. Discernment's obviously looked upon as us understanding others, understanding the will of God, and we're really good at that, eh? How many times have I sat in a service thinking, oh, man, I wish so-and-so was here. It was so good for them. But discernment of ourselves is a really challenging thing. So I also want to touch on that we should have the ability to obtain sharp perceptions and make good judgments and reading of ourselves. And this can be psychological or also moral. But how well do you actually know ourselves? It's like, I know my car, I drive down the road, or it's getting low on petrol, I know to fill it up. Well, yep, I'm going 100. One of the tyres might be a bit flat. Well, that's a funny noise. But how often do we kind of think, yeah, I reckon in 5 minutes I'm going to get angry. I better do something about this. It's more like, whoa, I'm angry. We can't actually don't sit back and look at ourselves so much. So just a little bit of introducing internal dialogue. Does everyone know what internal dialogue is? We all do it. We're not crazy. So us men, we speak about 8,000 to 10,000 words a day. It's God, I know, you don't get to 10,000 words and all of a sudden it stops. You know, some days you speak more, sometimes you speak less. But you think double the amount. So you think 16,000 to 20,000 words a day. That's crazy, yeah, double that, that's how many words are going to your brain. How often do you think or actually take notice of what you're saying to yourself? Is it positive? Is it winding up or is it winding down? Girls, you speak 15 to 18, sometimes 20,000 words a day. Did I say think? Sorry, you say. You say, you speak, which means you think double the amount. It's not a bad thing. I just put it out there. But how that reflects, hey, us boys get on the phone. I might ring Hayden and go, hey, what are you doing? Yep, surfing, cool, I'll be there. You know, Bex, 25 minutes later, you know, what are you talking about? Oh, nothing. It reflects with texts too. It reflects with texts. You think how many texts? I look at the kids at school. Texts, how many texts do you boys do? And then girls, 5,000 a month, you know, sweet ass. It's like, what? And the weird thing is, over the last 10 years, the amount of words we use is more. And I would have thought with emailing and actually all that social media, we would speak less and actually have it more in the written form. But we're not. We're speaking more. Which is kind of, I kind of think that life's speeding up a bit. We just talk, and maybe don't have so much time to think. Now, we all kind of want to be better versions of ourselves, eh? We'll sit down and say, what do you want? You have all this list. But if I say, do you want to be worse or better? You're going to be better. You want to be super versions of yourself. You play tennis, you want to be better. You want to be better at your work. You want to be better with your money. You want to be better leaders. You want to be better parents. You want to be better partners. You all want to be better. But again, I kind of get challenged of, how can we do this if we don't actually understand ourselves? If we don't have discernment about ourselves, we don't understand what's going on, how do we get there? So getting a bit scientific, here we go real quick. This blows me away straight away. So in your brain's about the size. It's not too scientific, okay? It's about that size, big chunk of meat. But on average, it has 100 billion cells in it. And I think, I don't know how much, that's a lot, eh? I can't actually think how many, you know, 10, I can picture 100, yeah, 1,000, yeah, 100 billion. But it gets kind of more complicated than that. So the limb by synaptic kind of nerves, paths, say strings. Here's the number of those. Each brain cell can connect to 10,000 each other brain cell. So that's about 100 trillion. You know, do I understand that number, eh? So to get a picture, someone told me this story, and I was like, okay, I can kind of get the picture, but I'll try it with you guys. Everyone hold your hands up, fingers like this wide. So everyone here had a string going from one finger to another person in their finger. So how many people would you be connected to? 10, yeah, someone said it, 10. You got 10, finger. Come on, switch on to it. So you get everyone in Raglan, you can put your hands down. Everyone in Raglan do the same thing in a kind of confined space. You understand it, it kind of keeps going. And then you got everyone in Waikato, you get everyone in New Zealand. Then you get everyone in the world. Well, what's 4 billion or something in the world? I'm going billion one, billion two, it'll increasing every second. Then you get everyone connected, everyone in the world doing that. And then you do it with your toes. And then you times that by 50 million, and that's kind of what's going on in your brain. And here am I standing up here going, don't you know yourselves? Come on, discerning yourself, suss it out. Haven't you got your own mind sussed? It's this freaky, weird thing. And it's a bit like I remember Andy saying when he was talking about grace. Agreed with everything he said. It's one of those things you start opening up. It's like a can of worms that the more you know, the more realize you don't know. And scientists don't know much about the brain at all. So today I just want to, what I'm doing is a real slither. And a lot of it's not even scientific. I'm doing it in a way that we can kind of understand it in our lame man's heads. So I'm going to put on a vid soon, but before we do, I just want to introduce it a bit. It's going to go for about 4 minutes. It's about boxing, yeah, boys, but about fighting. But when you're thinking about the mind and how it thinks and the psychology behind it, I can't think of any other sport that would play with your mind more than boxing. If I go on a rugby match, I can be nervous. Whoa, that guy's big. But in boxing, if you lose, you also get beaten up. And there's nowhere to hide. You're stuck in a ring. And everyone is watching you. It's pretty crazy. So we'll do a bit of a play there. Whether it's getting a job, being top of the class, or winning an Olympic gold, our responses are the same the world over. When we're close to winning,
spinal cord and brain. But that's not all. There's Adrenaline from the adrenal gland near the kidneys and testosterone flood throughout bloodstream. They've already given us strength during the competition, and now they keep us alert and speed our recovery. We breathe more deeply, and our heart rate increases, taking more oxygen-rich blood to our brains and muscles. Now we're primed and ready to take on the world again.
Now, just stop there a bit, and yes, I know it's to do with boxing, but to let you know, we can all feel this feeling. And it always, when it goes to the extreme, has action towards it. So I just want to show you this. Shanice brought home last week. Kira brought home this week just been. So Shanice is six, and she got this. It's for always being on task, working quietly, and ready always for the next activity on time. And so, you know, she brought it home, we kind of give it to her, and she's like, yeah, and you can just see it in their face, a six-year-old, over a little thing like this, for action that she did right. And with us, again, it doesn't even have to be sport, but it always has action to it. You think when it just tickles your fancy, like helping someone across the road, or someone drops a wallet, and you pick it up and you return it. And then the bits that really, really get you absolutely that excited and happy and victorious are the things that you do when you don't have to do them. You think of the people that are on the mercy ship, that actually spend money to go on a ship to help others to operate or be nurses or to be cleaners to help others. And they're the happiest people in the world. You go, and they're just this glow. And so the first thing is to remember is happiness. I mean, we can be happy when you say something and all that, but oh, I thought about giving you a cake, but I didn't quite do it. But when you have the action to it, comes that happiness and that, and those natural chemicals, that natural high. That's why the way we're designed. So carry on. The failure. Whew. So I just want to stop there for a bit before we finish up with that. And we've all felt that. That sinking gut feeling. So that six-year-old, I can growl at when she's done something wrong, taken her sister's toy, and you just see her just, oh, so deflated. I don't know about you, sometimes when I say I'm going to do a job to someone at school and I forgot to, and they come to me and say, Dean, you do that, I'm, oh, you feel like this naughty 12-year-old kid again. It's crazy. Now, one thing I just want to say in there, we've got to be careful. Of course, when you've got young children, we're parents or leaders or family, and they do something wrong, of course there's got to be consequence. But I'd also like to say that you do not want to continue that anxious, that fear, that wrongdoing for too long. And we've got to make sure that they know that they're loved, because I'll talk soon, because that can create anxiousness later on in life. It can create phobias and fears. So just to finish up. What? What? So now when you're just all encouraged and we feel like, oh my. Our bodies are beautifully and wonderfully made. And let's be honest, when that sort of fear that's meant to be burnt in there is when you've lost one leg and one arm and you're blind and you catch yourself up a tree and you fall and you remember, oh, I better not do that again. There are times when we shouldn't do things, and that's why it's in there. The other stink thing our brain has when we use it wrong is it can switch from being happy and victorious within 5 seconds to defeated and deflated. And you see it in rugby games. You get two teams that are like, you know, the first half, they're on each other's line, defend, defend, defend. Then you go to the other, defend, defend, defend. Get to halftime, 0-0. And then afterwards, one team comes on absolutely amped. The other one's a little bit asleep, 5 asleep. They score a try straight away. And all of a sudden, the floodgates open. One team just, and the other team just get that, whoa, and it's 40-0. And it happens quite a lot in youth rugby. Not so much in adults, because they start learning how their minds work a bit. But, yeah. So, phobias. Who here's got a phobia? Who's got a fear? Let's see. Just put your hand up. Spiders? Mice? Keep your hand up. What about public speaking? What about fear of falling out of a plane? Fear of... Yeah, we get there, you know. So, our fears take different shapes and all that. So, I just want to quickly tell you a story a little bit while you put up that other picture. Will be cool, and I'll talk to it soon. You'll go, what is that? But anyway, here's the story. In my youth, I was not a very good learner. In fact, one of the worst readers I knew. And in teacher's wisdom, they'd put us in a circle, say 5, you know, I haven't got the exact accurate kind of age, and I was about 5th around. So, you know, a girl starts reading, yeah, and typical boy, I'm like, you know, gets to about the 3rd person, I'm so disinterested, hey, I'm like, gets to Dean, your turn to read. And I'm like, oh, but we are, yeah. And all of a sudden, teacher growls at me, come on, you got to focus. What are you doing? You don't know where you are on the page. There's only three words in each line kind of thing. Oh, you're 5. And straight away, I've got that negative thing going at me. Yep. So next time, start reading. What happens? A bit like the boxer. The muscles start shaking. Oh, it's coming around. So I'm like, by that time, all my mates are laughing at me. The teacher stops, and you shouldn't laugh at me. The damage is done, eh? In my mind, burning in there, I am not a good reader. So this goes on for ages and ages, but oh, by the age of 6, I've clicked onto something. I've clicked onto that I can work out that, okay, I'm the 4th person, so I'll be reading the 4th line. So as they're reading theirs, I'm not listening to them. I'm practicing hardcore my line, you know? The duck swam round the pond. It gets to me, I can do it. Yeah, it's all right. Ah, get a bit older. In their wisdom, you're sitting out the class by the time you got desks, you know, the ones that lift up. And the teacher doesn't go around the class anymore. They just pick a name. So I'm like, where am I going to read next? I don't know. Dean gets up, gets stuck on the word interest. Laugh, 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 laugh. Oh, so now I'm afraid of public speaking. So you can see how the anxieties manifest and do things. And so I just want to show you this little bit here. This is a bit like a what happens in your brain. These are those strings that we're talking about. Can you notice it's a bit thicker and brighter down the bottom? So that is anxious fear. So the one coming up on the left-hand side, the stronger one, highly likely would have been that very first negative thought of, I've lost my place, I'm a bad reader. Yep. Somewhere else up the top there, coming from another neuron down the line, was when I couldn't get past the word duck. Then from somewhere completely else in the brain was the public speaking. But it all comes down to that one little thing. And there's consequences. So at the age of 17, I still remember it now. One of my mates, we're in math, we're just joking around. I couldn't get this thing, and it must have been easy. I couldn't get it. But I remember him saying to me, Dean, you are so thick. And it just went, oh, got that gut feeling again. Whoa, there it is. Went to the same place. That's great. And so other things that the consequence of that, that people don't actually know is, and this is the stink thing about our brain and the way that we've got to be careful with it, is when Roger asked me, that's what I'm saying, I don't know, 2 months ago, do you want to stand up and speak? Somewhere else in the brain. And for me, just teaching all that sort of stuff, but I think of when I was back at 6 and 7, my greatest fear, more than anyone else, I mean, I know people say, like, I hate reading in front of people, I hate public speaking, but I would get shakes, manifest, freak out, dribble. I don't know anyone would be worse than me. And maybe that's me just being, you know, looking inside and all that. I know people struggle with public speaking. But I kind of think what I went through, it's crazy. And the consequence is also, the weird thing now is, I get those feelings, and later on, I can, you know, like now, I can kind of laugh at them. But the weird thing is, the circle thing still happens to me. This morning, we're getting a here we go, I'm sharing stuff that's going to be held against me, I know. So we get in a circle, and straight away, I'm in a circle. So the sad thing is in our brain, I mean, heck, the science of the brain is just so amazing now, eh? They can find out where you have love in your brain. They can actually go down with music and find out whether you have melody and the difference between beat and rhythm in all different parts of the brain. But they don't actually know where you reside, what makes up what you make up. And there's always confliction going on there. But what they do think is the bits that light up the most is you. In those billions and billions and billions of places. So a little bit quick, have to move fast, I know I'm going to run out of time. Okay, brain. Brain stem, on top of that, this mass. On the top, got cerebral cortex on the back, the cerebellum. And you heard the guy, when he's the frozen, you go back to that reptilian brain, hey? You freeze. So quickly, the difference between reptilian brain and our brain is that they have basically the brain stem and at the back the cerebellum. The dog has a bit of the cerebral cortex on top, so when you come home, it can be happy, wag its tail. But if you had a little gecko lizard and you come home and it wags its tail and goes, you'd kind of freak out a bit, eh? Yep. So you understand that the higher up we go in our brain, the more likely we can have a better sense of perceptions. You can read other, oh, I'm happy that my owner's home, I'm going to wag its tail. Now, the weird thing is the importance of happiness. Happiness is like this gate. If you are happy, like all us teachers have been told now, if you can keep a student happy, they're more likely to learn. But it's kind of this vicious cycle. Like, if you get down and out and anxious, how do you get happy again and open up? And if you can't use that top part of your brain and find out and feel empathy for other people and understand ourselves, how are we actually going to get to the top part of our brain? It's this kind of weird sort of fight. So, let us read this. It's Mark 14:19. Jesus, this is talking about this parable of different soils and, you know, putting things in and stuff and if they grow or not. But the worries of life and the deceitfulness of wealth and the desires of other things come and choke the word, making it unfruitful. So stuff, wanting stuff. So I'm going to just go through and read you this quick little study about happiness and becoming victorious. And it's an earthly one. It's not a Christian one, but the cool science and Christianity are getting closer, and I'm really stoked about that. For years, we've been like, let's deal with the spiritual stuff and not trying to understand, you know, what's up in here. And if you're a Formula One racing driver, You probably don't need to be a mechanic, but you should know when to slow down, conserve petrol, and actually get to the end. So I'm encouraged by wanting. It's weird that we don't actually, like, we like to know about our jobs or our building or our teaching, but we don't actually want to know much about where we reside, and especially up here. So before I read these studies, I just want to, this one particular study, you need to understand that this is for an affluent country where we've got everything we need. So if you're in Africa and you haven't seen water for 2 weeks, you're going to be way down in that reptilian brain, just survival mechanism, trying to get water, nothing else. And you know what? That's the way we designed. There's nothing wrong with that. But also, completely different studies have shown that the happiest people in the world are where there's water and food, they're safe, and no electricity. Weird, eh? So here we go. Here's a study. And this study is by Jacob Sokol. It's a pretty cool word, eh? Pretty cool name. Sonia Lee Savitsky, he studied, and she's way up there with the science of psychology of the brain and being happy and victorious. So here we go. Happiness, 50% of it is genetics. That guts me a little bit, eh? I look at my dad and he gets road rage and it's like, oh no. Or maybe I'm in Ragland, I can park on 45, no one cares. Okay, I'm going to get rid of that trait a little bit, but you can understand that, yep. Now here's the shock, 10% is the acquisition of material stuff. So how you make happy? I want to get a new shirt, I want to get a new car, I've got a new surfboard, I like the way it looks. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's 10%. So 40% is coming from your actual actions we take. So if we take away, if we change it, you take away the DNA, the genetics, because we can't control that. Who cares? We can't be born into a Ferrari, we might be born into a Holden. But we can change that Holden to a V8 racing machine, but you can't turn it to a Ferrari. Some of us are blessed, some of us are not. Anyway. So if we change that, the 10% for acquiring stuff turns to 20%. That's pretty cool. But 80% is our actions. And here I'm reading a bit more. Here's the actions. They got a list of 12 of them. Pretty cool. Are we practicing kindness, love, patience, gratitude? Are we being optimistic? Are we cultivating relationships? Are we avoiding social comparisons? And they even put forgiving, and on top of that, they acknowledge that believing in a greater power lengthens your life. It's like, hello, science waking up a bit. It's a bit crazy. And the weird thing for me, I don't know about you, but for 90% of my time, I've been concentrating on that 10%. And for years, it's just been killing me. And I don't understand it. So, because you get this emotional thing, oh, I like my shirt, it's cool, here we go, I'm happy. Mates say, nah, don't like it. So, defeated, up and down roller coaster. Yep. So how bizarre is that? Science is actually saying that when we're doing action, if we're being like Jesus, you can get happier. So now I'm starting to look at, like, what about those shadows that I've got? You know, I've got that kind of resounding sort of like thing in my life that's, how do I keep away from that? Be like Jesus. Pretty crazy. Caroline Leaf, you got a bit of work. Caroline Leaf, a Christian person, psychologist, works with people, comes to them, helps fix up their lives. Again, so she's put out lots of stuff about the brain. And I just want to read a quick thing that she wrote, kind of on advertising here. You can YouTube her. Personally, I find her hard to listen to because of her accent, but what she's saying is astonishing, amazing. But there's a lot of stuff out there that's really good. Here we go. Science is finally catching up with the Bible, showing us the proof that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. Breakthrough neuroscientific research is confirming daily what we intrinsically knew all along. What you are thinking every moment of every day becomes your physical reality, and your brain and your body, which affects your optimal mental and physical health. These thoughts collectively form your attitude, which is your state of mind. And it's your attitude and your actions, not your DNA, that determine how much your quality of life is. That's pretty cool. So how cool was God's actually designed us to have action? And I think of there's three people. What are they doing afterwards? Why baptizing? Why not just say you're baptized? So as soon as there's action with something, it triggers something in our brain that makes us way more healthy, way more happy, way more likely to be victors. So going back to, kind of rounding up a little bit here, Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. And I'm not here to lie to you. Like I said, that little bit that's burned into my life, that's called consequences. And that can be, it looks very similar to sin. It looks very similar to addictions. But how crazy is it that God has designed us to just be like him, and through that there's healing. And I want to do this big scientific thing about, oh, this is the way you do, but we're not all the same. And we shouldn't want to be like anyone else. It's all about us trying to be the better version of us through Jesus Christ and whatever it is. So I just want to read a few little verses to you real quickly that are a bit more empowering than the guy falling over looking like defeated. Have I not commanded you to be strong and courageous? Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you and wherever you go. Another one. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. Another one in Psalms. I sought the Lord and he heard me. He delivered me from all my fears. That kind of sits with me. I'm sitting here with a microphone kind of shaking kind of. For 2 months, I think I was shaking. But it's good. I can laugh at it now. It's cool. It's a reminder. Don't, Dean, do that to young people. So I don't know what God wants to do now. And like I said, I think it's more of a practical thing of understanding what's going on in our lives. But at the same time, if we've got shadows and if you've been discerning of yourselves, I don't think pastor or anyone's going to stop you wanting to come forth for prayer. And for me, in my healing, is finding out, you know, of course I've got sin in my life, but finding out what others did to me to give me those scars and then get prayed for them, then revisit them. Take time in your quiet time of, why am I acting this way? And I see I've got friends all around the world who are Christians, who are giving more money to God than what I am, way above the 10%, who are, in my eyes, not doing obvious sin. And their hospitality is amazing. One group landed in London, they looked after me and all that. And they're just the most churching every week and giving to the church, but they can't get out of their valleys. They live life so hard. It's like, man, you're doing everything right, but where's your blessings? And there's two little patterns in there. One, they got lots of stuff. And two, not judging them, I don't know, just from my own background, I bet you they got scars other people have done to them and that haven't been addressed. So how about I pray? Maybe the musicians come. And then we'll just go with the flow, eh? Just bow your heads. God, refresh us today. Help us look at our own hearts and guide us. Give us discernment of our own past to show us anything that we need to clear up that's holding us back. We all want to be super versions of ourselves. We all want to be renewed. Please, God, help us to step into who we are supposed to be. Thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for your words. And I just thank you that you promise to not harm us, to give us plans, give us a hope and a future. Please take our worries and our fears and anxieties and let us be happy and victorious. In your name, amen.